Hi, I'm Nick.
Hi, I'm Thomas.
And this is the Unbossing Podcast.
A show about unleashing the full potential of every organization.
Hi guys, would you like to have this inspiration and this magic between Nick and myself daily? Please follow us on Instagram, Nick the Unbosser, or me, Thomas Hubuch, or best case both, or follow us on LinkedIn and you have it daily. If you are a CEO, if you are an employee wanting to find back your passion, or if you are a potential partner wanting to join the Unbossing movement, do it and follow us. Good morning, Dirk.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone watching us now.
Yeah. Good morning, all Unbossing believers. And Nick, talking about Unbossing believers, we have this podcast this morning with two of the biggest Unbossing believers in the world. Is it like that, Nick? What do you think?
Well, I was super enthusiastic to talk to Namfung and Dirk. Because I know they've been role modeling and implementing the teal paradigm, you know, from Frederic Laloux, which is a synonym for unbossing. And not only that, since 2014, so already they have quite some experience. It's already 6-7 years, but they're doing it in Vietnam, which it intrigues me because it's a different culture, and I want to understand. What the impact is of trying to do something like this in a different culture, in a Vietnamese culture. So welcome, Dirk. But before we dig in, maybe first introduce the company Officience to us. What are you doing? So that our listeners get a picture of the company itself.
Sure. So Officience started in 2006 in Vietnam, in Ho Chi Minh City, so Saigon, the southern capital, as a technology company, what we call a BPO, ITO, offshoring company. So basically, offshoring means, you know, we leverage on countries to get customers in France and produce the job in Vietnam, right? That's offshore. And BPO means business process outsourcing. So companies would delegate us administrative tasks. It can be HR, accounting, data analysis, reporting, picture editing. And, you know, you can Photoshop pictures for e-commerce company, market watch, all the type of jobs you can do from a computer from far away. And ITO basically is IT outsourcing, meaning mobile apps, internet portals, this kind of software engineering stuff, right? So it's quite a common scheme to do IT offshore, even in 2006. And we grew up as a kind of regular company, having as a model, all those big Indians or US company, Accenture, Infosys, Wipro, and the likes. And our unbossing journey started in 2014, indeed, as you mentioned. And now we are still kind of doing the same thing, but for a different purpose. As of now, we have 250 people in Ho Chi Minh City in the payroll. We still have 80% of the revenue coming from France to pay those people on the payroll. And in France, we now have a community of would call the members of the Officience tribe. So they are not on the payroll, but they are still office in their heart. And that might be 100 to 150 people doing their own projects, but like-minded.
Okay. You really have the comparison between implementing an unbossed organization in Vietnam and doing something similar in Paris. So my follow-up question would be, what are the main differences? Are there any differences?
Yeah. Nick, just a second before we move to that. Duke, in 2014, you say your unbossing journey started.
Yeah.
What triggered you to do unbossing, Duke? Yeah. Was it like Nick? I always say Nick, he's born with the awareness that unbossing is the way to go. So Nick knew that already when he was a baby. I had to learn it sometimes the hard way in my life. How was it with you? What triggered you, Duke?
We learned it. We learned it, and it was quite a selfish process, I would say. We came to Vietnam to create jobs for Vietnamese people, bring technological knowledge to young kids, and bring competitivity to French companies. But the way we were planning to do it was by playing the role of market and market laws and capitalism, right? And from 2006 to 2009, we grew up from our Rolodex, basically our address book, calling up friends, former colleagues, etc. And then in 2009, we reached a plateau. We stopped growing and we started to wonder what's going on. And we figured out, well, maybe we need sales and marketing because we're all engineers at the start. So we hire 3 marketing people, 3 salespeople. We buy the Kotler book and the 4 P's and all the things, and we roll that out.
Now I'm so curious.
We start doing cold calling. We implement a CRM, Salesforce. We do a product line, price catalog, line of business, all the stuff, business units, and it's. Growth is taking back, but quite slow first. We are more in the 10% as opposed to the 25% a year range. But the bad news is it's really awful in terms of life experience. The customers, they are not our friends anymore. They don't share our purpose. They are not eager to help Vietnam develop, so they'll be looking for the cheapest cost and having a more win-lose concept of business rather than win-win, etc. And we start to realize, wait, what the hell? This is not the life we want to have. This is not the job we want to give to the staff. We are not proud of what we're doing anymore. And the sales, they start to bring any kind of customer. So any industry, even the arms manufacturer, arms dealer, etc. And we say, wait.
I get it.
And so we start to dig into more books and we read this guy called Seth Godin. He was quite fashionable at the time because he was doing good TED Talks about the future of marketing. And what we read in the books was, hey, sure, you can go back to the word of mouth scheme and only work with your friends. The trick is quite simple. What you do is you identify your purpose and you just scream it aloud in the street, online, anywhere. And people who believe in the same cause, they will listen, they will come closer. And people who just think you are nuts, they will just, turn their feet away and they'll leave. And you'll end up in the middle of what he calls a tribe of people, like-minded people sharing the same purpose. And you will work with them because they are the only people you talk to. So we say, okay, let's do that. And in 2012, we let go the salespeople and the marketing people, so the whole team, 6 people. And we started to say, okay, now we're gonna choose our customer, even if we are not you know, a high-end luxury superstar company, but we're still going to take that bet that now we choose our customer. So, but pretty quickly, we realized that you can't really do that if there's only like the three board members who spread the cause and the 200 people behind, they're just here for food, right? Because the customer is calling you 3 weeks later saying, hey, wait, I work with you because you want to save the planet, whatever. And I talk to the guy and he doesn't care. And he's you know, jet skiing every week and he doesn't want to save the whales. So that doesn't work. It's called social washing or greenwashing, however you want to call it. But we realized it couldn't fly. So that meant we had in Vietnam, in the production side, have people who are like-minded, who are also aligned with the same five pillars, what we call the five causes that we are advocating. So developing Vietnam, social entrepreneurship, tech for good, sustainability, and knowledge sharing. So education, or open source, open data. So those are the five pillars we are pushing all the time. We are advocating for them. And
I have to say at this moment, that rarely have I heard a more inspiring unbossing story and why and triggering and I don't know how it is with you, Nick, than what you just told. I also would like to say a shorty welcome to Nam Phuong. So happy to have you with us. And Nam Phuong, what Duc was just explaining to us when I asked him what was the trigger for unbossing, he said, guys, there came a moment when we played it by the book, you know, with all this sales stuff coming in, with all this money and dollar signs on top of mind of them. And then we were sitting there and said, wait a moment, is that what we wanted? Is that why we are all doing that? To have $2 more and even $5 more? In the next half hour on the account? No, guys. And that was a fascinating moment, Duc, when you explained that to us. And I just love it. And I don't want to lose it. I don't want to forget about it. I will probably never forget about it. I just want to mention it. Thank you. So thanks, Duc, and welcome, Nam Phuong.
Hello, everyone.
Also, it's quite courageous, Thomas. I mean, there's also, you know, the typical when you pivot from the traditional way of doing things towards, you know, having those clear five principles, choosing your customers as a small, not high end brand company. Yeah, there's that first super crucial step where you say, okay, I accept all the consequences of being authentic with who we are and what the message we want to bring. And we believe that this is the way to go, and we accept that we will lose people. We accept that that it is going to be tough. But there's simply no other way than just being authentic with who we are and what we are trying to do and why we do it. So fantastic example of that courage that you need in the beginning of your journey. Right, Nam Phuong?
So it's make me a little bit reminder about my story when I come to Efficiency First. Because before I was the student in France for 10 years. So I discovered about Efficiency very accidentally, because I know some friends who was in the same association, and then they introduced me about Efficiency because they was the sponsoring for our activities. And then one day they say that go to the Efficiency office in Paris to discover what they do. And we come there and we see many flyers about protect the nature. We see Vietnam picture, etc. And I still don't know what they do. And I see the causes I see people very nice. I see and enjoy many meetings and the talks about different topics in the society. And I still don't know what they do. And one day I come back to Vietnam and I decide to visit the official office in Vietnam. So I meet the co-founder of Duc, so Cao Phong, to have a lunch. And then I discovered that, oh, there are a big company of many Vietnamese people work in different projects in IT, in data, etc. And then I say, wow, I don't know. There are a big, many people who work in different projects there. And that's why I start to understand what they do and I want to contribute to that organization. So that's why I joined as the community engager there from the 2017 until now. And that's why it's very interesting because we start with the why and not the what. And it's more connecting to people more than what.
And by the way, welcome to the club. What connects us at HighFluence is the why, is our mission, full stop. And there are no exceptions. And therefore, I understand that very well, what you are saying. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah, and especially, Thomas, every moment like this one, where we are manifesting our why. When we are putting it into action is when we really feel the connection. Now, I can ask my question back, Thomas. So, Duc and Nam Phung, you are unbossing, implementing Thiel both in Vietnam and in Paris. Is there a significant difference in culture and therefore in how you approach this journey towards a Thiel organization? Or are we all just humans looking for purpose and wholeness and self-management?
Yeah. So just a second, Nick, you mean a significant difference between an unbossed team in Paris and an unbossed team in Vietnam?
I mean, it's a journey, you know, building this Thiel company. And does the difference culture between Vietnam and Paris, does that impact in any way the journey? And is therefore the journey different? Are there different challenges or is it fairly similar?
It's never like for like, right? The culture is, if you take the example of
I lost Duc
50 years ago.
Okay.
And so there are stigmas of that time. Then there is another layer from the political system, socialist republic, etc. Then there is another layer due to the current economic situation, the high growth of the economy. And then there's another layer because at Officient we are in the technology industry, so it's the young urban professional, highly educated. And the culture we build from efficiency is across the sum of all of it, and we add that the impulse of following the Thiel way. Now, if you want to compare France to Vietnam, you also have to consider that in Vietnam we started with a company with 200 people, and we made a transformation towards Thiel. Whereas in Paris, we opened a small space, 100 square meters, and we say, okay, this is going to be the home of our five causes, and we're going to dedicate this space to the five causes. And we kind of start from a blank page, and we didn't hire anyone, for instance. Very few people. And we say, okay, anyone who shared the causes is part of the tribe. Anyone who is part of the tribe can come and sit and work, and let's do project together. which give a sense of a co-working, like, except that it's not a co-working business. People don't pay to come, right? They just come because we're friends. So we don't share the rent, like in a regular co-working, but we share the purpose, the five poses. In Vietnam, we had this 1,000 square meter space with 100 employees there, because we have two offices. So, but in our flagship place, you have someone else joining in, and you say, "Okay, come and feel at home because you share the code, so you can sit with us and work with us." But you know, still you see these 100 people already there, and it's very hard to make people feel they're at home or they're equal, and they would be intimidated and ask for many more permission.
How was it managed before, these 100 people? Were they managed in a very traditional way before the unbossing?
Pyramidal management by objective, performance review every 6 months, executive committee. We had a business unit. Each business unit director had managers. The manager had team leaders, and team leader had the analyst.
And what about now?
Now we have. So we developed a notion of cluster. I've been fighting hard to dismantle this concept of cluster, saying no, it should be fully horizontal. We are all free will people, but in fact, I learned the hard way that there is a sense of belonging, a family belonging, that creates the need to say, okay, I'm part of that club, you know, that it's not the pizza team, it's more the karaoke team, you know, the group of 20 people, right? So we have those concept of clusters, and people feel they belong to such or such clusters, and some people are across clusters and have a weird feeling because they're kind of outliers, and that's it. But there is no budget, so there is no budget per cluster, and there is not one single boss for each cluster. So it's
but it's so no performance reviews. And so also the 6 monthly performance reviews, that doesn't happen anymore. How did you reinvent that?
It emerged. We did not really invent the scheme. We said, okay, there are three principles: wholeness, self-management, and self-evolutionary purpose. And let's build from that. And practice emerged, and they became kind of rituals, you know, tradition. And now they're here to stay probably for a long time, because the more you repeat a ritual, the more it gets into the DNA of the organization. So, so the question I get first most of the time is salary. How do I design my own salary? So it's a good example. As you know, in TL principle, you can take any kind of decision, but you need to share your intention with the people who are expert and the people who are impacted by that decision, right? I'm not telling that to you, but for the people who watch us, in case they haven't read Frédéric Laloux. So if you want to increase your own salary, I guess everyone is impacted because you're taking money from the bank account, right? So it's less for everyone. But if we tell people, okay, you just stand up on the stage and say, everyone, hey, I'm going to raise 20% my salary. You're not going to believe me, but people don't want to do it. I'm not going to go in that stage, and I'm still going to get a pay rise, so figure out. So we say, okay, let's find a proxy. Let's find a few people you can talk with, and they will give you feedback, and you will be more comfortable because you will choose these people. So choose 5-6 people, people you respect, people you have trust, people you will listen to, right? Because you need a safe space. for such a delicate topic. Pick a few people who know your job on a daily basis. So what we call them, your proximity influencer. There's a saying that goes, you are the average of the five people you talk the most to, because you see the world through their eyes. So pick a few people like that. They know the customer, they know how you perform on the project, etc. They talk to you every day. But also pick a few people who have skills you'd like to have, role models, people you respect or you admire because they have selling skills you want to get, or they have technical skills you want to learn, and they can give you a feedback on where you stand. They can give you advice on and guide you on how to progress. So take two, three of each. We call the first one the proximity influencer and the other one the spiritual influencer. Although the actual term is leader, right? Because when you get influenced by someone, that's a definition of leadership. But we didn't want to use the word leader because it would be assimilated. You know, there's too much confusion between manager and leader. So we picked a new word for that called spiritual influencer. And everyone is speaking. So in total, you have a group of 4, 5, 6 people. Sometimes it goes to 10, 20. And you talk to them. And you tell them, okay, this is how much I believe I should raise myself. How do you feel? And you share your intention with that people. They're like your beta tester or something. And they will give you feedback and you will listen to them. And once you're confident enough, you will go on the intranet and you share with everyone. You say, hey, this is the objective I had. This is how much I have performed. This is what I'm going to do tomorrow, etc., etc. And therefore, I'm raising myself 15%. Accounting, please advise. And at the end of the month, you get your 15%.
Guys, this is fascinating. And I immediately have to ask Namfung. Yeah. Namfung, when did you do that for the last time? And how did it work out?
Last time I was doing it was 1.5 years ago, 2 years, I don't remember a lot. And I was, it was very, I love every moment when I, not only the salary review, but I love moment with my influencers because whenever I have a question, I have problem, etc., I always come to them to ask and to share my intention. And I'm very lucky and proud of myself that I choose the right influencer. So they are always there for me and they know everything about my working life and my personal life also. And we become very close. So when I ask about the salary review, I ask their advice because the whole year they know already what I did. So the flow is very easy because they know why I'm there, why I suggest some raise. And also I share my objective and they are there to compliment about that, to suggest me and to push me up and give me more motivation to develop myself. So this was a very good experience for me. And during 2 years, I don't raise my salary because I think about the COVID time and as we have the transparent financial inefficient, so I know that we need to balance on the expense, etc. So I decided to hone my salary for the good of everyone. So that's why I didn't raise now for now. And I hope that we will the better future next year.
Fascinating. Yeah, Nick, go ahead.
Yeah, this is unbossing in practice, Thomas. I'm smiling and enjoying, and I know the process and the journey to get where Duken and Nam Phung and officiants are, it's a tough journey, especially on salaries, because there's a lot of emotional identification in traditional companies between the person you are and the salary you earn. And it's typically also something that people use to compare themselves with others, not from an authentic way in terms of value, but more from an ego-driven way. So to break through those patterns is a tough journey, but it's a fantastic example that they both share here, what the light at the end of that tunnel is. And just the last reflection of Nam Phung, where she says, yeah, the fact that finance is transparent and that I understand the progress the organization is making or the challenges the organizations have drives me not to do a salary review this year, is just a fantastic practical example of what unbossing does with people. So
it is, Nick. It is, Nick. And on the danger that I now interrupt this fantastic discussion made in heaven, I come with a rather mean question to Duke. Duke, when you started that journey with the existing organization then in Vietnam, how was it? Did you lose some people along the way, or were they all cheering and dancing on the table that now finally they will all see the light?
Yeah, Duke has seen the light. Yay!
Yeah. Let's party and let's make a Frederick Laloux day every day. Duke, how was that? Were there some inconvenient moments along the way? Did you lose some people along the way?
Yeah, it was inconvenient. I was lucky enough to be in France at the time, right? And I
that was a good one.
I need to credit our head of IT, so the IT business unit had done the shift to agile also already, right, in 2013. And we were feeling a lot of tension, because since we shift our marketing model and sales and marketing model towards a purpose-driven, we had shifted the recognition model from the more money you sit on, whether it's cost of revenue, the more powerful you are, towards something where the more vocal you are about the causes, the more you blog, you tweet, or you go to university, etc., the more influence you get across the organization, because we put you in the spotlight, right? And so we started to have a distortion of influence compared to the pyramidal hierarchy we had in place. There were people who were joining since 3 months or 6 months who were already very highly influenced and who could just lead a riot in the organization if they wanted to. And we had maybe higher rank officer who were here just for the food, and that was creating a lot of tension. And we are in 2013, and we are feeling all this tension. And we, in December, the head of IT, she be praised, said, okay, we can try things, but I have to warn you, it's not pyramidal. There are new types of hierarchy coming over. There's this guy called Jürgen Appello, who is promoting management 3.0. And then we build the clusters at this time. We flirt with holacracy for a few months, and we realize it's not for us, etc. So 2014 was a year of experiment, and the whole year we gradually moved towards experimented with a lot of organization. And Frederick Laloux came out in October 2014. That's when we read the book and we met him, etc. And then we wrote what we call a handbook, which is a constitution. And I said, okay, I'm giving up my power of CEO to the constitution. So now we follow the rules, the three big principles, and everything was to be built. But because I was in France, I was, evangelizing and talking about the purpose in France, building up a tribe in France, And the former executive committee in Vietnam was being challenged by people. They were having people coming to them saying, hey, Duke said we can do whatever we do, so I will double my salary. What? How about that? And they had to go through, endure the pain to say, okay, come and sit with me and I'll teach you the basics of finance and I will walk you through the number of the company and I will make you realize, you have to make people feel that their salary is not a question of me and the company, but it's a question of me in the group, right? So you have to make them feel that, okay, if I double your salary, is it fair? With the rest of the team, etc. And it's a long process. And you have people who are more stubborn than others. And that was a very hard time for the executive team and themselves. They got you know, tired and they left as well. And we are still friends now, but when I talk to them and we have a drink, they say, you know, you owe us. You know, we had a very hard time because of your thing about, you know, just letting things go, and you know, they had to take the peace and manage all the chaos that I had kind of initiated by resigning from my CEO job. So, yeah, there was quite a hurdle. There was quite painful times. There has been people leaving.
Mm-hmm.
But in the long term, you know, when I talk with them, they have no regrets. I mean, they like what has been, they're proud of what they have done. They're just kind of, you know, blaming for not being there when it enough. But on the other hand, I feel it. I could not really be there because if I had been there, then I would still be bossing people. So
yeah,
I think I agree. I'm bossing by absence, Nick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's also something interesting
that Thomas practices every day. Every day he practices that.
Well, it's even maybe sometimes worse than that because. By being absent, then the they could say they could read the books their own way. But not only I was not dealing the small case, but I was keeping, you know, saying the big things like everybody is free, and now you have to take your own responsibility, and then you have to realize how much, etc. So I was how do you say in English when you are sending oil on the fire, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and now, Nick, I have to ask it because, guys, you were talking a lot about financials being transparent for everybody. Namfung, you were also talking about the COVID period, which was not the easiest of periods for all of you guys, and therefore, I would like to know. Talking about the purpose and talking about being true to yourself and walk the talk. So if half a year ago or 9 months ago, a huge weapon producer would come to you, Namfung, and would say, hey, here's the deal. I have worked for 30 of your people. You can build up a totally new cluster and it's top-notch technology and here's the margin I pay. How do you react to that, Namfung? Maybe it even happened. I don't know.
You mean that there are someone who will come and give us a project?
Yeah, a weapon.
No, what I want to know is how important is the purpose as compared to short-term financial success? Because there are these moments where you have to make a choice. There are these moments where you cannot have it all. Or is it like that? Do you have it all at the moment?
Because it when from the beginning when I come to Efficient, I never meet that problem yet. Because we start with always with friends in our community first, in our tribe first. So we have already a Duke in Paris who discuss with people there already. But so, time to time, for example, one time we talked with a company who work about, I don't remember the their potential project about paper stuff, who on the plastic bag, I don't remember. And we talk a lot about the problem of plastic bag. And if we decide to accept to develop their website. And I remember that we asked many times to recommend them to transform to into the new solution, etc. And we asked also the member in the IT project to think that they want to join the project or not. And finally, after many discussions, and finally we didn't accept the project. There are different, I think that there are different things to impact this decision, and including the causes. It's not only the causes, but we think about a lot of things that there are people who interest in the project. And if the project is brings something to learn also to them. And finally, we didn't take that project.
It's your question, Thomas, is tricky in a teal organization because the purpose is self-evolutionary, right? So someone is giving me a deal I don't like, me to me in Paris. Should I transfer it to Vietnam? Who am I, me, alone, to decide if, yeah, this guy is a good guy or is a bad guy? That would be dictating my own set of values to the whole organization. It would not be self-revolutionary anymore. I would be dictating the purpose. It would be a traditional, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I ought to share the opportunity to people. So I say, hey, there's this guy I met. I can't deny the fact that he needs a website and we could do it. Here's his email. By the way, how's your family? Right. So I am morally bound to not being a blocker, right? But I am also morally bound to be true to myself and to say what I think about the project. So I say, okay, there is this opportunity. And, you know, if your father is sick from a heavy cancer and you need to make money now, and I can't blame you for taking the job.
Yeah. So, no, it's not about blaming. And Duke, maybe I give you a better one. Let's suppose the customer, maybe an existing customer, a wonderful customer, is coming up with the proposal to increase the business with a new project. But from your point of view, this increase is very good for you guys financially, but long term, it's not good for the customer to do it, because maybe the customer is going with the IT infrastructure on the wrong track. But again, you guys, you profit tremendously from it in the next 2 years. Fantastic business, fantastic financial figures, but not the best thing to do for the customer perspective. How do you go about that, guys?
No one cares about the figures in 2 years, and actually no one knows the figures in 2 years. No one knows the figures in, we all know the cash in the bank because you log into the bank system, you know what's the cash. That's all we know. And actually we had this challenge. It's a problem, I think, in our type of organization is we have a customer who is coming to build a whole new cluster in a whole new activity that we are not doing today.
Yeah.
No one has an immediate interest to build that cluster because the people who will profit from the cluster are not hired yet. They are not in the company. So no one is here and say, oh, yeah, let's do it. We don't have salespeople. We don't have marketing people. We only have people doing their own project. They're interested in something that will be their next project. Yeah. They're interested in something that my help them guide their career or find their new position. But if it's a new cluster in a new activity they will never get involved in, it's not going to change their salary as well. Why should they care? They don't care. They say, yeah, maybe do it if you want, but I'm not going to interfere. So it's a break, right? It's sowing. If you are in a growth perspective, saying I want to be the biggest guy in the room, it's a problem because you don't have energy to create new cluster out of nothing. The the long term thinking is, of course, wait. If we have this new activity, we have a new stream of revenue. We can secure more treasury. We can be more resilient, and it's good on the long term. But it's a very long term thinking, right? And people are not willing to spend too much energy on the short term for the long term. So they're going to say, "Yeah, let's do it," but they aren't going to really actively be selling and engaging to make that project happen. So you have to find a few people who, like, they are tired of their job and they want to go there, etc. But it's not easy, and it's a problem for the sustainability of our organization. And actually, we haven't been growing. We're 250 people for years now.
Okay, yeah, because you do voting by feet. Actually, if there's an opportunity for a new cluster, no one of the 250 employees feels the energy, then it doesn't happen. Okay. Thomas, despite the fact that this is a super interesting practical conversation on bossing, we are approaching the end. So if you would be so kind to ask Namfung and Duke our final question.
It's always the same. Duke Namfung, I'm a European CEO of a huge IT service company. And it's very traditional and it's very bossed at this moment. But now I listen to this podcast. I listen to you, Duke, talking about purpose. I listen to you, Namfung, talking about how the salaries are decided and the influencers are there in your life and how happy you are. And I want to do the same thing. I really want to. Now, what is the biggest mistake which I could do in order not to succeed despite all my wonderful and good intentions? What is the biggest mistake I have to avoid at any price when doing that, when going down that road?
You want to start, Nanfu?
There are always the big confusion about the boss and the influencer, because we always see, sometimes we see the how people do it and we forget about the why we do it. And for example, Luke, time to time when he say that he likes something in the intranet, and people think that, yeah, because Luke like that, so we must decide like him. But he do it to share his intention, but not to push people to do exactly the same. So there's some time to time the confusion about that. And
love it. Yeah. Very recognizable.
So,
and especially when you have difficult topics where Duke as an influencer falls back into his bossing behavior, and where employees, when it gets tough, fall back in, boss, just tell us what to do, rather than taking his advice and then seeing what to do with it. So it's a very recognizable example. Fantastic. How about you, Duke?
And it gets, I'll give you mine, but I'll just carry on this one to push the mistake to avoid, to at some point you will believe that there is a right thing to do and there is a big mistake. And you see people going in what you truly believe from the bottom of your heart that it's a wrong decision. And you say, wait, unbossing doesn't mean I should lower my voice or I should lie to myself. I need to be honest as well. And I need to say what I think. So you wait all the possible way you can to for your own decision to convince people they are doing going wrong, right? And at the end of the day, people remember you were the CEO. People know you're the founder, and there is a chance that eventually you twist their arm and they go to your direction, right? And if you do that once, then people understand, okay, it's not really unbossed. It's actually, we can do whatever we want as long as the boss is okay with it. Yeah. So that's a very hard time. It's difficult to go through because you truly, maybe you think they are going to kill the company and you have to say, okay, I said it once because I'm true to myself. I think it's not the good decision. But I let go and I let them do it.
Disagree and commit.
And it's very hard. But if you don't do it, then you kill the beast, right? So it's the extended version of I like something and everybody's rushing there. It's when I dislike something and then if it's freezing everyone, it's killing the organization. You know, they are not ready. But my own advice is based on what I call the five flows theory. So instead of seeing a corporation, I just see people and people, what they trade goods, they trade money, but there's also what Julie says, the psychological assets or something, which I describe as the flows of trust, the flows of knowledge, and the flows of emotions, feelings. So we are humans, we're not robots. So we exchange all the five flows. So we have a much richer exchange than we do when we see people like cogs and corporation like a machine, right? So you have to let those non-machine flows flow in. And that means smileys, that means selfies, that means sharing your feelings, that means embracing all those new forms of expression. But if you don't want to be overwhelmed and drawn in the massive amount of infobesity, as we say, of information, you also have to shorten those messages to fluidify. You know, make the information more liquid, right? By embracing the chat and the SMS and all the modern communication techniques, which are shortening, you know, an email is 10 lines long, a chat is one line, right? So the road is to fluidify the information, the flows of information, and let the non-merchant flows come in. Right. The one big mistake is to think that, we will unbossify, but we will still be cogs in the machine. So we will we'll be very agile, whatever. But I don't need to share my feelings and I don't need to say if I had a bad day, Sunday with my family or my kids or whatever. So get the information as liquid as you can and embrace technology to share those emotions, trust, selfies, like, and all the system. You cannot escape the whole thing.
Nick, our podcast with Duc and Nang Fu. Another interesting one, don't you find?
Very practical case of a 7-year journey, Thomas, in 2014, with a lot of practical lessons learned to be taken away from this conversation.
Nick, now you're saying 2014. They came from a traditional model, didn't they?
The whole nine yards, Thomas. They had a pyramid structure, management by objective, executive committees, and not in your smallest company. Eh? They had They have 250 people on the payroll in Vietnam and 150 collaborators in France.
So very classical. And then we asked them about the triggers. And I found that so interesting. One thing stays in my mind, Nick, that they felt that's not the life they wanted. They all wanted to be proud of themselves as people and as employees, and they were not feeling that, right?
And yeah, that was it's a very recognizable story, a story of a company that wants to grow, that invests in marketing and sales, and does it by the book, you know, management by objectives, implementing these heavy CRM systems and so on. And the focus became so much on growth that they did grow in numbers, but in terms of customer and employee experience, it was more a win-lose rather than a win-win mindset. And that resulted in a context where they didn't really feel proud about what they were, for what they were doing.
Now, Nick, you are talking about win-lose in terms of customer relationships. And that means also the classical way of short-term thinking. I want to win as a company, no matter if the customer loses, right?
Yes. We had a, well, we presented that case to Duc, and I found his reflections super interesting, where he says that at any given point, you need to assess an opportunity with the information you have in the moment. Yes, the potential future is a variable that you need to take in place, but who knows what's really going to manifest in the future. So work with the information you have in the moment. And as a CEO, do not impose your ID on the opportunity. And that's a huge personal development process and journey for him, that he had to find a new frequency of communicating so that he can share his ideas on the opportunity without giving his employees the feeling that he's imposing his ID on them.
Yeah, it's a classical voting by feet case, Nick, isn't it?
It's in the technique they use is voting by feet. Yeah, if people are energized by a new opportunity, they work on it. If they're not energized, well, then they let the opportunity fly away.
And now, Nick, I remember this statement of Nam Phung. She didn't even know what the company exactly was doing, but she was so inspired by the purpose that she wanted to join, right?
Yeah, indeed. So I think the trigger, once they've noticed they weren't proud anymore and not energized, was to go back to, well, to crystallize their purpose. Inspired by Seth Godin, create a clear and simple purpose, shout it as loud and as often as possible, and you'll end up with a tribe of employees and customers, and the rest of the world will just ignore you, okay? Mm-hmm. And so it's funny to see the impact in the case of Nam Phung, that she was so drawn to this company because of why they were doing things, so the five causes, which Duc clearly explains in the conversation. And she only found out after a while what it exactly was that they were doing, what kind of business mm-hmm. they were in. So in terms of employee branding and attraction, it's a nice example.
It's amazing. She also mentioned a very, very concrete process, namely salary process. As an example of a huge difference to a traditional organization, right?
Yes, and it's really it's a great metaphor as well for how unbossing is actually coming of age at work, that we're all becoming adults rather than the parent boss solving this. It's really a process of co-creation and co-ownership. And so what I particularly found interesting is that instead of one person evaluating you, the person, the employee, him or herself, has to make a proposal. So they have to reflect on what they want. To do this, they need full transparency and all the information mm-hmm. required to make a profound proposal. And then they have this, what they called proximity influencers and role model influencers. So the employee has to bring together a group of people in the organization. On the one hand, people that they trust, that they work on a daily basis with, that know what they do on the job. And on the other hand, role model influencers, who are people in the organization that they look up to because they have a position or they have skills that they admire and they want to grow towards what they have. And it's that group that will give feedback on the salary proposal of the employee. And well, I'm not saying this is the only way to reinvent your evaluation and remuneration process, but it's definitely a very nice example.
Yeah, and I also fully agree with you, Nick. There is a kind of misconception to say, look, guys, this is the standard unbossing way. These are the standard unbossing or agile or scrum processes which mm-hmm. you have to use. And I think we both agree this is wrong.
Yeah, every and it's also company, it comes clearly out of the conversation where Duk explained that on the one hand, during this journey, new and better business processes emerge out of simply yes. practicing on a daily basis the implementation of the purpose in any area of the company.
Yes.
And on the other hand, the first 2 years, they experimented with loads of different processes, tools, methodologies. And some of them they kept, and others, most of it, they just thrown away because it didn't work.
Exactly. In their case, it could work maybe in another company.
Yeah.
And we see that also with clients. Like, yeah? There is not the standard way. It depends a lot on the individual company. It's for me a key learning every time we go on an unbossing journey.
Mm-hmm.
And now, Nick, in order that that doesn't sound too good to be true, we were talking also about typical pitfalls with them and typical mistakes, right?
Yeah. So there was the one pitfall that Nam Fung, from an employee perspective, mentioned, that it takes a while before the symbol that Duk was as being the founder and the CEO is transformed into Duk is just one of many influencers in the company. So, and the in that process where Duk goes from the traditional CEO to just being one of the influencers, in that process, there's often confusion about whether or not he's still the founder or the CEO. And what Duk said about that is, that people remember that you are the CEO, and that it's, especially in difficult topics, it's very risky. You can easily fall back in those old patterns. And if you do that once, you basically say, guys, you're free to go as long as I agree, which is obviously not what you want to realize. But even more interesting, Thomas, I found the biggest mistake of Duk, where he said, if you don't liquefy information, if you don't embrace all types of information, business information, but also emotional information, then it is not possible to unboss your company.
Mm-hmm. And what do we have to think about? Price, of course.
Yes.
From Dedicate immediately. And I fully agree. Now, Nick, because I know it from my own experience, and I have seen it along. This thing of the CEO having been successful as a dictator in a crisis situation, I'm immediately reminded of this one. And this is a very, very dangerous one. Yeah? As you say, when the going gets tough, then suddenly to fall back and say, listen, guys, this is a crisis situation. Let's forget all the good weather stuff which we have done. Now we have to get out of the storm, and I will play the dictator. This is a huge, huge danger.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, yeah, it's, and that is a process, you know. It's you learn by doing, But in the end, it comes down to the football coach who is not going to step on the field because his strikers are not making any goals. The solution is not that he goes on the pitch and makes the goals himself.
Good one. Good one. And I also have to say that I love this picture of Dirk of saying liquefying information. It reminds me of paintings of Salvador Dali. We all know and immediately understand what he means by that. And it's a wonderful picture, I find.
I agree. Okay. Great recap, Thomas.
Indeed. And wishing them much success also in the future.
Indeed. Off to the next one.